Chapter 4. Stranger, who settling down among a rustic population, keeps quietly to himself. With some, inoffensiveness would seem a prime cause of offense. But what chiefly had led me to scout at these rumors, particularly as referring to concealed treasure, was the circumstance that the stranger, the same who raised the roof and the chimney, into whose hands the estate had passed on my kinsman's death, was of that sort of character that had there been the least ground for those reports, he would speedily have tested them by tearing down and rummaging the walls. Nevertheless, the note of Mr. Scribe, so strangely recalling the memory of my kinsman, very naturally chimed in with what had been mysterious, or at least unexplained, about him. Vague flashings of ingots united in my mind with vague gleamings of skulls. But the first cool thought soon dismissed such chimeras, and, with a calm smile, I turned towards my wife, who, meantime, had been sitting nearby, impatient enough, I dare say, to know who could have taken it into his head to write me a letter. "Well, old man," said she, "who is it from, and what is it about?" "Read it, wife," said I, handing it. Read it she did, and then such an explosion. I will not pretend to describe her emotions, or repeat her expressions. Enough that my daughters were quickly called in to share the excitement. Although they had never dreamed of such a revelation as Mr. Scribe's, yet upon the first suggestion they instinctively saw the extreme likelihood of it. In corroboration, they cited first my kinsman, and second, my chimney, alleging that the profound mystery involving the former, and the equally profound masonry involving the latter, though both acknowledged facts, were alike preposterous on any other supposition than the secret closet. But all this time I was quietly thinking to myself, could it be hidden from me that my credulity in this instance would operate very favorably to a certain plan of theirs? How to get to the secret closet, or how to have any certainty about it at all, without making such fell work with my chimney as to render its set destruction superfluous? That my wife wished to get rid of the chimney, it needed no reflection to show, and that Mr. Scribe, for all his pretended disinterestedness, was not opposed to pocketing $500 by the operation, seemed equally evident. That my wife had, in secret, laid heads together with Mr. Scribe, I at present refrain from affirming. But when I consider her enmity against my chimney, and the steadiness with which at the last she is wont to carry out her schemes, if by hook or crook she can, especially after having been once baffled, why, I scarcely knew at what step of hers to be surprised. Of one thing only was I resolved, that I and my chimney should not budge. In vain all protests. Next morning I went out into the road, where I had noticed a diabolical-looking old gander, that, for its doughty exploits in the way of scratching into forbidden enclosures, had been rewarded by its master with a portentous, four-pronged wooden decoration, in the shape of a collar of the Order of the Garret. This gander I cornered, and rummaging out its stiffest quill, plucked it, took it home, and making a stiff pen, inscribed the following stiff note. Chimney Side, April 2. Mr. Scribe Sir. For your conjecture, we return you our joint thanks and compliments, and beg leave to assure you that we shall remain, very faithfully, the same, I and my chimney. Of course, for this epistle we had to endure some pretty sharp raps. But having at last explicitly understood from me that Mr. Scribe's note had not altered my mind one jot, my wife, to move me, among other things, said that if she remembered aright, there was a statute placing the keeping in private of secret closets on the same unlawful footing with the keeping of gunpowder. But it had no effect. A few days after, my spouse changed her key. It was nearly midnight, and all were in bed but ourselves, who sat up, one in each chimney corner, she, needles in hand, indefatigably knitting a sock, I, pipe in mouth, indolently weaving my vapors. It was one of the first of the chill nights in autumn. There was a fire on the hearth, burning low. The air without was torpid and heavy, the wood, by an oversight of the sort called soggy. Do look at the chimney, she began. Can't you see that something must be in it? Yes, wife. Truly there is smoke in the chimney, as in Mr. Scribe's note. Smoke? Yes, indeed, and in my eyes too. How you two wicked old sinners do smoke. This wicked old chimney and you. Wife, said I and my chimney like to have a quiet smoke together, it is true, but we don't like to be called names. Now, dear old man, said she, softening down, and a little shifting the subject, when you think of that old kinsman of yours, you know there must be a secret closet in this chimney. Secret ash hole, wife, why don't you have it? Yes, I dare say there is a secret ash hole in the chimney, for where do all the ashes go to that drop down the queer hole yonder? I know where they go to. I've been there almost as many times as the cat. What devil, wife, prompted you to crawl into the ash hole? Don't you know that St. Dunstan's devil emerged from the ash hole? You will get your death one of these days, exploring all about as you do. But supposing there be a secret closet, what then? What then, why what should be in a secret closet but dry bones, wife, broken I with a puff, while the sociable old chimney broke in with another. There again. Oh, how this wretched old chimney smokes, wiping her eyes with her handkerchief. I've no doubt the reason it smokes so is, because that secret closet interferes with the flue. Do see, too, how the jams here keep settling, and it's downhill all the way from the door to this hearth. This horrid old chimney will fall on our heads yet, depend upon it, old man. Yes, wife, I do depend on it. Yes, indeed, I place every dependence on my chimney. As for its settling, I like it. I, too, am settling, you know, in my gate. I and my chimney are settling together, and shall keep settling too, till, as in a great feather bed, we shall both have settled away clean out of sight. But this secret oven, I mean, secret closet of yours, wife, where exactly do you suppose that secret closet is? That is for Mr. Scribe to say. But suppose he cannot say exactly, what then? Why then he can prove, I am sure, that it must be somewhere or other in this horrid old chimney. And if he can't prove that, what then? Why then, old man, with a stately air, I shall say little more about it. Agreed, wife, returned I, knocking my pipe bowl against the jam, and now, tomorrow, I will for a third time send for Mr. Scribe. Wife, the sciatica takes me. Be so good as to put this pipe on the mantel. If you get the stepladder for me, I will. This shocking old chimney, this abominable old-fashioned old chimney's mantels are so high, I can't reach them. No opportunity, however trivial, was overlooked for a subordinate fling at the pile. Here, by way of introduction, it should be mentioned that besides the fireplaces all around it, the chimney was, in the most haphazard way, excavated on each floor for certain curious out-of-the-way cupboards and closets, of all sorts and sizes, clinging here and there, like nests in the crotches of some old oak. On the second floor these closets were by far the most irregular and numerous. And yet this should hardly have been so, since the theory of the chimney was, that it pyramidically diminished as it ascended. The abridgment of its square on the roof was obvious enough, and it was supposed, that the reduction must be methodically graduated from bottom to top. Mr. Scribe, said I when, the next day, with an eager aspect, that individual again came, my object in sending for you this morning is, not to arrange for the demolition of my chimney, nor to have any particular conversation about it, but simply to allow you every reasonable facility for verifying, if you can, the conjecture communicated in your note. Though in secret not a little crestfallen, it may be, by my phlegmatic reception, so different from what he had looked for, with much apparent alacrity he commenced the survey, throwing open the cupboards on the first floor, and peering into the closets on the second, measuring one within, and then comparing that measurement with the measurement without. Removing the fireboards, he would gaze up the flues. But no sign of the hidden work yet. Now, on the second floor, the rooms were the most rambling conceivable. They, as it were, dovetailed into each other. They were of all shapes. Not one mathematically square room among them all, a peculiarity which by the master mason had not been unobserved. With a significant, not to say portentous expression, he took a circuit of the chimney, measuring the area of each room around it. Then going downstairs, and out of doors, he measured the entire ground area, then compared the sum total of the areas of all the rooms on the second floor with the ground area. Then, returning to me in no small excitement, announced that there was a difference of no less than 200, and odd square feet room enough, in all conscience, for a secret closet. But, Mr. Scribe, said I, stroking my chin, have you allowed for the walls, both main and sectional? They take up some space, you know. Ah, I had forgotten that, tapping his forehead. But, still ciphering on his paper, that will not make up the deficiency. But, Mr. Scribe, have you allowed for the recesses of so many fireplaces on a floor, and for the firewalls, and the flues? In short, Mr. Scribe, have you allowed for the legitimate chimney itself, some 144 square feet or thereabouts, Mr. Scribe? How unaccountable! That slipped my mind too. Did it, indeed, Mr. Scribe? He faltered a little, and burst forth with, but we must now allow 144 square feet for the legitimate chimney. My position is, that within those undue limits the secret closet is contained. I eyed him in silence a moment, then spoke. Our survey is concluded, Mr. Scribe. Be so good now, as to lay your finger upon the exact part of the chimney wall, where you believe this secret closet to be, or would a witch hazel wand assist you, Mr. Scribe? No, sir, but a crowbar would, he, with temper, rejoined. Here, now, thought I to myself, the cat leaps out of the bag. I looked at him with a calm glance, under which he seemed somewhat uneasy. More than ever now I suspected a plot. I remembered what my wife had said about abiding by the decision of Mr. Scribe. In a bland way, I resolved to buy up the decision of Mr. Scribe. Sir, said I, really, I am much obliged to you for this survey. It has quite set my mind at rest. And no doubt you too, Mr. Scribe, must feel much relieved. Sir, I added, you have made three visits to the chimney. With a businessman, time is money. Here are $50, Mr. Scribe. Nay, take it. You have earned it. Your opinion is worth it. And by the way, as he modestly received the money, have you any objections to give me a little certificate, something, say, like a steamboat certificate, certifying that you, a competent surveyor, have surveyed my chimney, and found no reason to believe any unsoundness. In short, any secret closet in it. Would you be so kind, Mr. Scribe? But, sir, stammered he with honest hesitation. Here are pen and paper, said I, with entire assurance. Enough. That evening I had the certificate framed and hung over the dining room fireplace, trusting that the continual sight of it would forever put at rest at once the dreams and stratagems of my household. But, no. Inveterately bent upon the extirpation of that noble old chimney, still to this day my wife goes about it, with my daughter Anna's geological hammer, tapping the wall all over, and then holding her ear against it, as I have seen the physicians of life insurance companies tap a man's chest, and then incline over for the echo. Sometimes of nights she almost frightens one, going about on this phantom errand, and still following the sepulchral response of the chimney, round and round, as if it were leading her to the threshold of the secret closet. How hollow it sounds, she will hollowly cry. Why yes, I declare, with an emphatic tap, there is a secret closet here. Here, in this very spot. Hark! How hollow! Saw! Wife, of course it is hollow. Who ever heard of a solid chimney? But nothing avails. and my daughters take after, not me, but their mother. Sometimes all three abandon the theory of the secret closet and return to the genuine ground of attack, the unsightliness of, so cumbrous a pile, with comments upon the great addition of room, to be gained by its demolition, and the fine effect of the projected grand hall, and the convenience resulting from the collateral running in one direction, and another of their various partitions. Not more ruthlessly did the three powers partition away poor Poland, than my wife and daughters would fain partition away my chimney. But seeing that, despite all, I and my chimney still smoke our pipes, my wife reoccupies the ground of the secret closet, enlarging upon what wonders are there, and what a shame it is, not to seek it out and explore it. Wife, said I, upon one of these occasions, why speak more of that secret closet, when there before you hangs contrary testimony of a master mason, elected by yourself to decide? Besides, even if there were a secret closet, secret it should. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.